Welcome to the Capital News. I'm your host, Alex Caritas. Today is February 5th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Title of today's podcast is 45 Acquitted. What next? So the president was acquitted today in the United States Senate for the conclusion of the impeachment trial for Donald John Trump, the 45th president of the United States. Pretty much down party lines. This was expected. This was anticipated. And that is exactly what happened. However, there was one crossover for one of the articles of impeachment. Remember, there were two articles of impeachment. The first was in relation to an abuse of power. The second was a charge of obstruction of Congress. Senator Mitt Romney, Republican from the state of Utah, crossed the line, if you will, and voted guilty on the first charge of an abuse of power. However, he voted not guilty on the second charge on obstruction of Congress. The senators were able to debate before the vote took place this afternoon, around 4 p.m. Mitt Romney gave his speech, about 10, 15 minutes long, I would say. It was personal, it was emotional, and it was somewhat moving. He voted his conscience. I also believe he voted in the correct manner, that the president is guilty of an abuse of power. I also believe he was guilty of an obstruction of Congress, but most definitely an abuse of his power, because it didn't have to do with corruption. It didn't have to do with the 2016 presidential election here in the United States. It had to do with a personal political benefit to the president, thus clearly making it an abuse of power. We've been through this many, many times before. If it was such a pressing problem and concern for the United States of America, then the president should have been concerned with it in 2017 and acted accordingly. You say, oh, well, he was busy in 2017. Okay, well, then he had it all of 2018, too. Oh, well, you know, he just couldn't get to it. But then all of a sudden, lo and behold, former Vice President Joe Biden enters the presidential contest. And now we have to understand what took place in Ukraine. We have to understand what took place with Burisma. We have to understand what was going on with Joe Biden and Hunter Biden and everybody else. Now it's of significant importance. To who? Not the country. To Donald Trump. If the Republicans were so concerned about it, they were in control of both houses of Congress in 2017 and in 2018. The Republicans are still in control of the Senate. Clearly an abuse of power. And the president will do it again. He said he would do it again. And we've talked about that before many times. The interview he gave with George Stephanopoulos of ABC News. If a foreign government approached you with information, would you take it? Or would you turn it over to the FBI? This was during the Bob Mueller investigation or right after. I think I'd take it. Maybe I'd do both. But I'd listen. He got information. I'd take it. I'd listen. Again, that was a softball. I don't know if George just said, well, maybe it's going to be a softball, but maybe I'm going to get something out of it. And we can always edit because it's not a live interview. Says that, hell, I'll ask the question. And he did. And the president, it was a softball. Could have knocked it out of the park. He could have said, George, are you serious with that question? I just spent the last 2 years of my administration having to fight this ridiculous notion that my administration, my campaign was involved with colluding and conspiring with the Russians to interfere in our election. It's been hamstringing my administration. Do you not hear me when I give press conference after press conference after press conference? Are you not following my Twitter feed? I want nothing to do with this. Of course, if a foreign country, a foreign actor came to me with information, I would immediately turn it over to the FBI. I don't need this headache. Furthermore, George, look who I'm up against. I don't need foreign help to beat my opponents. What a great answer that would have been. But nope. Hell yeah, I'd take it. That's the way the world works. I'd take it. Maybe I'd turn it over to the FBI. Maybe I wouldn't. But I'd listen. They got information. Now he's going to feel completely vindicated, completely exonerated. He's going to feel that Article 2 of the Constitution gives him absolute power, which he's already stated he has. He was acquitted off of that defense, that an abuse of power is not an impeachable offense. So what do you think he's going to do? Again, impeachment is not just about punishment for an act committed. It's about prevention of those acts in the future. And our founders were wise to this. That is why the remedy is removal of office. And the prohibition, they are not, anybody who is impeached is not allowed to hold office again. Because it is prevention of something similar happening in the future. People want to make the argument, well, you know, it's his first term. What's that have to do with anything? Are you familiar with the history of the United States? There were no term limits on the presidency when our Constitution was drafted. That didn't take place until after FDR in the 20th century. Makes no difference. I mean, that's just a weak argument to begin with. Well, you can't impeach him in the first his first term. If that was the case, our founding fathers would have said so, but they would have said, they would have laughed you out of court. They would have laughed you out of their conference. You serious? So I can come in, be sworn in day one for the first 4 years. I can act like the king. They can't impeach me. That's ridiculous. Completely ridiculous. And Mitt Romney, in his remarks, he basically shredded the White House counsel's defense, or what type of, or what resembled a defense, point by point, just shredded it because they had none. They couldn't defend those actions. That's why it was distract. That's why it was going after the House managers. That's why it was pretending that nothing wrong happened. That's why it was coming up with some sort of asinine argument from Alan Dershowitz that an abuse of power is not an impeachable offense. Makes no sense whatsoever. But he was acquitted nonetheless. And Senator Romney knew that the attacks, that the knives were going to come out for his back immediately. And sure as you know what, they did. Because I watched his remarks live, pulled out my cell phone, and I waited for the Twitter feeds to start spewing out. And sure as you know what, they did. Not even 2 minutes dry, and people are attacking him for voting his conscience. One stuck out to me, Dan Bongino, and I know I mentioned him here on occasion, conservative podcaster on Fox News quite a bit, handful of books out there. He knows his audience. He knows his base. He knows who's buttering his bread. He was on a rant. Multiple tweets from Dan Bongino. But there was one that caught my attention where he actually called Mitt Romney a life loser. There are many things you can probably call Mitt Romney, and I'm not a huge fan of Mitt Romney. I didn't vote for him in the 2012 election. I wanted Ron Paul to win. Well, you know what happened there. The country's not smart enough to vote for somebody like Congressman Ron Paul, not Rand Paul, Ron Paul. And so I didn't vote. I thought Obama was going to win, and he did. But nevertheless, there's a lot of things you can call Mitt Romney. Calling him a life loser, I don't think, is one of them. And it just goes to show how divisive our country is. This is a conservative podcaster, a conservative commentator going after a Republican, somebody who was the Republican Party's nominee. And Bongino admits that he voted for him in the 2012 election against President Barack Obama. Calling him a life loser just doesn't seem fitting for me. If I'm not mistaken, his wife Anne and him were high school sweethearts. That seems pretty successful to me. They seem to be in a legitimate, happy, loving marriage. That's something that I would consider a success. I would not call him a loser. They raised, what, 4 or 5 boys? Of course, now they're grown men with their families of their own. I don't recall any dirty laundry from that family when you had them running for the presidency in 2012. Because most surely it would have came out. So it seems to be a loving family. I would consider that a win, a success, not a loser, a man who was successful in business, a man who won the governorship in Massachusetts, and now he is a sitting senator from the state of Utah. Why is he a loser? And not just a loser, but a life loser. Because he lost to Barack Obama in the presidency, which is very difficult to beat an incumbent in this country. One of the reasons why I think Donald Trump is likely to win re-election. I don't want him to win re-election, but I'm just here to be as objective as I possibly can with my analysis. And at this juncture, I think the president will continue to do what he does, and he will win his re-election campaign. Although I hope that's not the case. Why else is he a life loser? Because he voted against Donald Trump, that he called him guilty for abusing his power? Because he did? This is what I'm talking about, folks. This is the divisiveness that exists in this country. And this isn't even, and this is going off the trail, really, because we're not even really remaining focused on the major issues and problems in this country, because there are so many distractions in our political process, the impeachment inquiry, the impeachment trial, the tweets, the disgusting rhetoric from the president, the disgusting rhetoric from the Democrats, the disgusting rhetoric from other Republicans, politicians and commentators alike, taking our eye off the ball, off the big picture, the things we like to talk about here, the Federal Reserve, what they're doing, trillion-dollar deficits, trade deficits. So we have a twin deficit, meaning we have a deficit in trade and we have a deficit at the federal budget level. Not good. Not healthy. Not a vibrant and strong economy. Most definitely not the strongest ever. Trade wars. Not good. The list goes on and on and on. That's the main picture. But we have to be distracted. The president didn't shake Nancy Pelosi's hand last night. She's behind him, shredding up his speech as soon as he's done with it. Oh, it just goes on and on and on. Nobody is rising above it. Nobody is being the bigger man or the bigger woman. Nobody. You know, there were some interesting takes as to why Nancy Pelosi did it. Was it okay? Can she do it? And then, of course, you know, there's the deflection. Well, you had Rush Limbaugh up there. And he was receiving the highest civilian honor you can in this country with the Medal of Freedom. And it was awarded during the ceremony. Well, Rush Limbaugh is a divisive character. Whether or not you agree with him, he is a divisive character. He says things that a lot of people agree with. He says a lot of things that a lot of people despise. And he has called pretty much everybody in that chamber last night, especially on the Democratic side, and Nancy Pelosi specifically, every name under the sun that he could get away with saying on radio. And there he is getting that Medal of Freedom. Now, maybe you're fine that he got it. I don't care. You understand? I don't care. I'm just trying to make the point. There is blame to go around. Every side. It's a circle. It's never going to end until somebody stands up and says enough is enough. And I was hoping that that would be Donald J. Trump. It has not been. He continues to stir the pot. He continues to go round and round in the circle at hyperspeed. And the Republicans go along with him, and so are the Democrats. There's no end in sight. None whatsoever. After the acquittal, I was waiting for Thunder Thumbs to tweet something out. I was hoping it was going to be a formal, prepared statement. I was hoping he would send it out. I was hoping there would be an official statement from the White House, saying the same thing, of course. Enough is enough. We have to come together. All that type of stuff. Whether or not you're going to agree with it or believe it, it would have been the right thing to do. But is that what Thunder Thumbs tweeted out? No, of course not. Couldn't do it. He had a tweet out. That image, that short video, whatever you want to call it, where it says Trump 2020, Trump 2024, 2028, yada, 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 et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Because it trolls the Never Trumpers. It gets under the skin of the Democrats, people that don't like him, all that stuff. That was his initial response. The first response. Something very serious took place. Only three times in the history of our country has a president had to go through this. And that's his response. not something solemn, not something serious, not something to rise above it all. Let me put something out there that's going to get under the skin of all the people that don't like me. That's nice. That's good. That's presidential. That's bringing the country together. Fantastic. Poor leadership. It's pathetic. It's pathetic. And then later on, there was another tweet or statement that he, the president, will make a formal announcement tomorrow, I believe, 12 p.m. Eastern time, in regards to the acquittal. So, 45 acquitted. What next? I guess we're going to find out tomorrow. We know that the 2020 presidential campaign is going to be picking up in full swing here. At the time of this podcast, the 100% of the vote in the Iowa caucus on the Democratic side is still yet to come in. I think we're at like 90, 92%, somewhere like that. This is a shame. It's a true shame. They're going to have to do something with this caucus. I mean, I don't care what, it's up to the states, up to the people, what they want to do, if they want to have a primary, if they want to have a caucus. I think the caucus is stupid, personally. Go in, have your secret ballot, pull the lever, and be done with it. Count the votes, tally them up, and let people know what happened that night. Shouldn't be that difficult. We're supposed to be the beacon of democracy here in voting, in transparency. It's 2020. I mean, if this is an omen of things to come for the Democrats, they're in trouble. It's not good. I don't anticipate this will be the case for the remaining early primaries and caucuses. We're going to have New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada coming up. And then Super Tuesday, that's where the big boys, the big states are up for grabs, and all of those delegates and superdelegates. I think that Michael Bloomberg is probably going to have a really good chance here of running away with it. I think it's probably going to be up against him and perhaps Bernie Sanders. I think Joe Biden's probably going to find himself in a little bit of trouble. Of course, we're still awaiting the results out of Iowa, and we'll see what comes out of New Hampshire. I think Joe Biden is sort of banking on South Carolina to sort of carry him through to Super Tuesday and to get some momentum that way. If Mayor Pete Buttigieg is the winner of Iowa, this, the fact that it's stalled out in the manner in which it has, that really stunted his momentum. There's a lot of, you know, political inertia, political momentum that would help carry a candidate through, get some fundraising, all that stuff. I mean, they need money. So that's going to put a hurting on him. Bernie Sanders, I mean, he's got a big grassroots effort underway for him, a lot of that support, and he is probably going to do well. That's unfortunate. He is a socialist. He can call himself a democratic socialist. I don't care. That's what he is. And it's a sad state of affairs that people in this country are flocking to that type of idea as the solution to what ails us. And it is the exact opposite. It will cause more problems. You know, Donald Trump, again, getting up in the State of the Union last night saying, you know, this is never going to be a socialist country, that socialism isn't going to take over our health care. It's too late, Mr. President. It's too late. It's too late. And you're obsessed with the stock market and keeping it propped up. That's socialism. That's totalitarianism. That's, oh, look what I did. Look how great I am. That's a monument to me. Stock market keeps going up. Not because of organic growth. Not because of great economic numbers in this country or elsewhere. But because the Federal Reserve is pumping in tens of billions of dollars, if not $100 billion, on a nightly basis. All you have to do is look at the futures. Look at when the market opens. Straight up most of the time. And then it just levels off during the entire trading session when it's actually the cash trade. Not the futures market, but the actual cash trade between 9:30 and 4 p.m. Just levels off. There's no price discovery. It's a scam. It's a con. Tesla shares going through the moon. Well, they sold off, I think, maybe what they dropped down, 18, 20% today. Big hit. I mean, if you think this stuff is sustainable, good luck to you. The risk-reward, as far as I'm concerned, is not worth it to be throwing money hand over fist into this market. This is a ticking time bomb, in my opinion. Do the markets care about the fundamentals? They don't right now, but they will. They didn't care in 1929, but they eventually did. They didn't care in 1987, they didn't care in 2000, they didn't care in 2007, but eventually the fundamentals come home to roost and everybody understands what kind of disconnect there was. And everybody walks around, oh, I never could have seen this coming. Well, you want to be the one who has to play the fool, play the idiot, or do you want to see it coming and be diversified and be vigilant so you can be prepared? Of course, I could be wrong. I always admit that I could be wrong. Maybe this time is different, although I don't think that it is. I think what's going to make this time different is that the correction is going to be that much worse. Because now it's everywhere. It's not just in housing. It's not just in the corporations. It's everywhere. It's the governments. It's central banks. It's individuals. It's everywhere. Zombie company after zombie company allowed to survive and in an attempt to thrive in this environment, which of course it can't, because of all the problems that we see here on a daily basis. It's one thing after the next. Market performance, though, today, well, you know, the coronavirus continues to make the headlines. And the Chinese Communist Party, remember, I've been warning about this for months, and it was in regards to the trade deal, but it's one and the same. It's when will the Chinese Communist Party and the headlines that come out of China, when are they going to start getting a lot of credibility? Well, today you have some headlines coming out of China that saying, well, the coronavirus, you know, we might have a vaccine. We might have a vaccine, and the markets just absolutely loved it. They took off. And then who? The World Health Organization comes out and says, nope, that's not true. So you would think that maybe the markets would reverse because you got the Chinese Communist Party who have a vested interest in propping their own markets up and making it seem like everything's fine versus a health organization whose job it is to remain calm and to tell the truth. Oh, no, we're not going to pay attention to those people. We're going to listen to the Chinese Communist Party. We're in a lot of trouble, folks. Because the World Health Organization comes out and says, that's not true. Furthermore, despite the many, many advancements that we've experienced over the past few years and decades with medical advancements and technology, it's still going to take months, maybe even an entire year, before we have a vaccine that can be distributed globally. Chinese Communist Party, we got a vaccine, something's coming up. World Health Organization, no, that's not true. How do the markets respond? Buy everything. And if you look into this, the Chinese are building quite a few new hospitals. They're putting them up as quickly as possible. I'm talking within a matter of weeks. They are putting them up to get 1,000 beds here, 1,000 beds there, 800 beds there. If it's contained, if everything's fine, you wouldn't need more hospitals. And of course, we strongly believe here at the Capital News that the numbers that are being reported are very, 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 very underreported. Not even close to the true figures. Will we ever know the truth? The truth is always the first casualty. Because China has a lot riding on this. They're supposed to have everything together. The Chinese Communist Party, it's a planned economy. It's a planned political system. Well, this wouldn't be going according to plan, would it? People dying, there could be social unrest. Can't have that. Cannot have the economic weakness either, because that's holding the fabric of that country together. And it's already being stitched together with debt after debt after debt. And remember, they just flooded their markets too with over $100 billion over the past day and a half, 2 days. Nothing's real. It's all fake. Wait till the music stops. You're going to have a chair. The Dow gained 1.7% today, up 483 points. The S&P 500 closed up 1% higher, gaining 35 points. The NASDAQ 100 gained 0.4%. A little bit of a pickup, a little bit of a V-shaped recovery, if you will, in the commodity space. I think this is going to be short-lived. But we have WTI trading at $51.70 a barrel, an increase of 2% for the day. Brent gaining 1.5%, trading at $56 and some change a barrel. Natural gas is still on its downward trajectory at $1.88 per million BTUs. Gold and silver have pulled back recently over the past couple of days. Gold is trading at $1,553 an ounce, and silver is at $17.62. Copper has been taking a shellacking on the back of the news of the coronavirus and the suspected slowdown that is likely to take place in China, at least through the first quarter. However, it has also seen a little bit of a rebound, up 1% on the day. We also have aluminum, however, continuing its downward trajectory and below $1,700 a metric ton. That is the first time aluminum has been that low in the past few years as well. And recall, that is a similar trend with natural gas. And I'm going to repeat it here this evening, like I have been over the past couple of podcasts as well. And I'm going to continue to harp on it because I think this is a very important point that we all understand. These energy companies, especially those on the margin, especially those involved with natural gas, are in a lot of trouble with these prices at these low levels. They are at serious risk of defaulting on their leveraged loans, on their junk bonds, which puts them at risk of going bankrupt, which is a situation that was witnessed in the mini recession back in 2015, 2016. That will happen again. The question is, will there be some sort of further consolidation of the industry? Probably. Probably. Will there be mergers and acquisitions? Probably. But there's going to be a lot of bankruptcies in the process as well. You know, something we talk about in length in our book, The Cynic's Guide to Investing, part three of the book starts to get into individual industries and sectors of the economy. And we note from the outset of part three in the book, there's one word that we want to drill home. There's one thing you take away from understanding part three of the book. What word is that? It's consolidation. It's consolidation. If you have a free market economy, you have open and free competition. You have a lot of competitors in the market, which should result in more product offerings, better service, better quality, lower prices. That's how it's supposed to work. But when you have massive amounts of consolidation, and your choice is Pepsi or Coke, Walmart or Target, McDonald's or Wendy's, Nike or Adidas, one after the other, one this option, option A, option B, it's consolidation. And your choices, obviously, are diminished. And the quality, it's what it is. The price, probably higher than it otherwise would be, just because there's a fancy label on it. You get my drift. It's not how it's supposed to work. But that's the system we have in place. That's the system we have in place. And it's because of the fiscal policies that we adopt in this country, and it's because of the monetary policies that we adopt in this country. And there's no end in sight. And in fact, it's just going to get much, much worse. Much, much worse. When it's all going to come tumbling down, I have no idea. I wish I could tell you so we could all be prepared and we could maybe sell the market at the top, make a lot of money on the way down, and then buy everything when it's pennies on the dollar and make a lot of money on the way up. Wish I had the crystal ball and we could do that, but I can't. That's why you got to be vigilant. That's why you got to be diversified. That's why you got to look into a little bit of everything: bonds, stocks, real estate, commodities, precious metals, cash, cryptocurrencies. If you're into that, do your own homework. I don't give financial or investment advice. I just give information. You have to do with it as you please. A lot of stuff going on, folks. We did that podcast a couple days ago. It's only January. Now, of course, we're in the month of February. And who knows what's coming next. But it is going to be very, very interesting, to say the least. The president has been acquitted. I imagine he is going to feel quite confident and quite powerful at this juncture. You know, the price of liberty is eternal vigilance. And we are going to have to be extremely vigilant now that this president is likely to feel completely vindicated, completely exonerated. And if you take him at his word that Article 2 of the Constitution gives him absolute power, that he can do whatever he wants, I think we have to take that seriously. And because we have to take that seriously, I think we have to be seriously concerned. I take no pleasure in saying it. I thought he was going to be a different person. Perhaps there's still time that he will be, but I am highly skeptical of it. And I don't think it's worth the risk. It's just simply not. We'll get through it. We'll be fine. There's going to be better days ahead. But before we get to those better days, there's going to be a bumpy ride. And again, I am not laying this all at the feet of the president. It's not all his fault. He's just not doing much of anything to really make it better. At least not as far as I can see. There are some things that he's taken head on, and I give him credit where credit is due. You know those issues. But for the most part, he is falling well short. Well short. As is the Democratic Party, as is the Republican Party. Again, this is not all on Donald Trump. But there are things that we can do to get back to having some semblance of a civil society. Although I do believe it's going to have to get worse before it gets better. And what gives me that feeling is history. It's history. That's how people operate. It's always the last minute. There has to be a war before people can say, well, that's the war that ends all wars, as they said in World War I. This will be the war that ends all wars, of course. 20-some years later, it's World War II. Didn't take that long, did it? Then it's the Korean War. Then it's Vietnam. Then it's the Cold War. Then it's Iraq. Then it's Afghanistan. Then it's Iraq again. Libya, Syria. Is Iran next? Stay tuned. We'll find out. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Kuraitis. Godspeed.